Have you thought through how you're going to repair clothes, including denim, jeans, or repair leather bags or backpacks or maybe saddle gear for your horse? How are you going to get this done in a low-tech or a no-tech scenario? We're going to talk about sewing machines here for a minute. And just like with tractors, as you've heard me talk about many times, there are modern microprocessor-controlled tractors. And then there are older tractors, built in the 1970s typically, that don't use all those electronic parts, and those are much easier to maintain. And those are considered more low-tech. And then there's the no-tech approach to farming, which is, you know, a shovel and a rake and just hand power. Well, with sewing machines, here's how that goes. So you have modern-day microprocessor-controlled sewing machines, which do all kinds of amazing stitches and things. And then you have older vintage sewing machines that often use electric motors, but they don't have microprocessors. And many of them are made out of cast iron or aluminum. And for example, Singer has a lot of older machines. And one of them that I'm in the process of acquiring is called the Singer 201K heavy duty sewing machine. In fact, right now I'm bidding for this on eBay. I end up going to eBay to buy a lot of vintage equipment. Now, what's amazing about this Singer 201K heavy-duty sewing machine is you can sew through a quarter inch of leather. And this is widely considered to be the best sewing machine or heavy-duty machine that was ever made by anybody. And these were made from the 1930s through, I think, the late 1950s or the early 1960s. And they're built like tanks. They're very heavy duty. And the amazing thing about them is you can attach a hand crank to the primary wheel in order to provide hand power, even if you have no electricity. And if you open up one of these sewing machines, you'll find that it has metal gears inside. And it's a purely mechanical device, something that you could repair yourself if you had to, with some skill, obviously. But you're not going to have to replace a circuit board. So in essence, these older vintage sewing machines, which I think are absolutely essential for survival in what's coming right now. I mean, think about, you're going to have to make your own leather holsters and things like that. You're going to need to sew them, right? So these are essential because they survive EMP weapons and they can function in a grid down scenario. So this kind of Singer sewing machine, and granted, this is kind of a higher end vintage sewing machine, and to buy one of these, you might spend anywhere from $500 to $1,000. So this is not the cheapest thing out there. You can buy refurbished Singer heavy-duty sewing machines that are modern, around $200 or $250 and so on, but they use microprocessors, and they're not built like tanks. And there's no way to power them manually, and that's the key. So what if you end up surviving in a scenario where there's no electricity, there's no power grid, but you need to repair clothing and bags and leather and things like that? So it's very slow to use a leather stitching awl, you know, AWL, an awl. That's, you know, where you're stitching by hand every single stitch, you're punching the awl through the leather and you're pulling the nylon thread. And you're going hole by hole, and it's very, very slow. It is tedious. It's going to take forever. What if you had a machine that could do that with, you know, 100 times faster or even more? Well, that's these old Singer sewing machines, and you can buy the crank handle, and I think the crank handles are sold out there for something like $120 or $150, and attach that crank handle. And you just have someone stand next to you like, crank that machine, girl or boy or whoever it is. Crank the machine and I'll sew. And with two people, you can get that job done in no time in a grid down scenario. So sewing is, I think, a critical skill. And having the right sewing machine is also critical. And that all, it goes back to vintage machines. Vintage machines that can be operated by hand power, with a hand crank, or foot power, and I don't mean an electric foot pedal. I mean a foot powered, like a piston. This is what my grandmother used to have. You would push your feet back and forth on this metal kind of plate that was located, near the ground underneath the sewing machine, and this drove with a rod. It drove the rotation of the primary, I guess you could say, flywheel that powered the sewing machine. So you could just pump your feet and you could sew, and you didn't need electricity. That is going to be a very, very valuable system to have in the months and years ahead. In fact, I was on eBay and I was searching for a machine like this and I couldn't find one. I guess everybody's already bought them or something. And I remember seeing it when I was growing up as a kid. My grandma had it, and I always thought, it's so strange. Why would you have a foot-powered machine when we have electricity? And now I know. Grandma is always right. Turns out it just takes a few decades for the rest of us to figure that out. So I admit that some of the vintage machines that I'm buying might be overpriced or out of the price range for basic prepping. So make sure that you do have a leather stitching or canvas stitching awl. And you can buy those online. I mean, Amazon's got kits with needles and an awl and thread for, $15 or $20, something like that. So you can at least cover the basics. And that's a no-tech solution right there. If you have a chance, you can move up to a low-tech solution and get some kind of vintage sewing machine like I'm doing. Or if you have a very limited budget, but you want a machine, these Singer machines, they're called Heavy Duty, made by Singer, Singer.com. I think one of the model numbers is 4452 is a popular one. They're in the range of $200 to $300, very modern, very capable, heavy duty stitching, just straight stitching. And they don't use a lot of electricity. So you could plug them into something like a solar generator. It would run off of a lithium battery. I mean, I don't know how many watts these machines use, but it can't be that much. I'm just guessing maybe less than 100 watts. That's my guess. It isn't very much. So if you needed to sew and you needed electricity, you could still maybe do that in an off-grid situation with some solar panels and a solar generator, which is a battery storage device. Now, when it comes to sewing supplies, now I've bought, at this point, I think four sewing machines, four different machines for different purposes. Three of the four are modern, and then I've got an older one, and now I'm trying to buy this 201K as well. So I've got enough machines for multiple people to have sewing machines or even use them as barter items when needed. But make sure you have enough thread. And remember, there are different types of thread. And the strongest thread is nylon. So if you're stitching leather, when you want things to really, really last, you want nylon thread. And I think stocking up on thread, it's almost as good as buying gold. You know why? Because in a collapsed civilization, you know how difficult it is to make thread? Or even just to make nylon, if you think about it. Nylon is a high-tech material, but it's used in so many things, you don't think about it. It's incredibly durable. And one of the strongest synthetic materials out there. And if you have thread made out of nylon, then everything that you stitch with that thread is going to last probably longer than the fabric or whatever it is that you're stitching together. Nylon thread into leather, the nylon will probably outlast the leather. Or certainly if you stitch a pair of denim jeans with nylon thread, the nylon's going to outlast the jeans by far because the jeans are made out of cotton and the cotton won't last as long as the nylon. So if you think about the kinds of things that are going to have real value in a collapse scenario, nylon thread, in my view, is right up there along with ammunition, right? And gold and silver, because everybody's going to need some thread. It won't be long before people's shoes and boots and clothing and bags and purses start falling apart. And in a collapsed economy, you can't just run out and buy new ones and throw away the old ones. You're going to have to start repairing things. in fact, a lot of the economy is going to shift from a consume and discard mode of operation to a repair and maintain focus on things. And that goes for boots and clothing and bags and saddles, but also appliances and vehicles and tractors and garden tools and everything you can imagine. We're going to be moving into a repair mentality just by necessity, because the supply chain is collapsing. So one of the common threads, no pun intended, in what I'm teaching here is to think about the skills and the systems that you need locally, the things that you need to own in order to be able to repair and maintain the other appliances or vehicles or motors or whatever that you need to survive. So when you hear me talking about sewing machines and sewing thread, and then also metal casting, for example, or learning basic welding techniques and having a stick welder and so on, what is this all about? It's all the same topic. It's all about repairing and maintaining things that you already own or that you are able to acquire, because you won't be able to find replacements very easily. And then also think about, you know, what's the value of nylon thread in a collapse scenario where people's shoes and boots and clothing are all falling apart? Or what's the value of a sewing machine with a hand crank that works off-grid? It's insanely valuable. You realize you could have a whole business just mending people's clothes or mending people's wallets. If you can stitch through leather, you can mend, you know, saddles and canvas bags and backpacks and tents and all kinds of things that are made out of heavy-duty fabric. You have a unique piece of technology, an off-grid sewing machine. It's incredibly valuable. And I know some people might mock me about this, but I don't care, because I can see what's coming. I've seen it for a long time. And this is why I buy vintage equipment that works without electricity. And what's great about sewing machines is they need so little power that they actually can be powered by hand, which is not possible for a vehicle or a tractor, obviously. You know, tractors would be replaced by horse power, i.e. horses, whereas a sewing machine can be powered by human power. So, you know, a lot of added value in society to be able to stitch and sew at relatively little cost right now. So if all of this makes sense to you, I would encourage you to go online, maybe eBay or wherever you know how to go, or maybe search local garage sales, who knows, but find a vintage sewing machine that works and learn how to use it. That's what I'm going to do. I haven't yet learned how to use the Singer 201K, but you don't have to be a rocket scientist to learn the basic skills of sewing. Not to say that, you know, a seamstress or whatever the right word is, not to say that they don't have amazing skills at very high levels of their art, but I'm talking about just covering the basics. If I just want to sew a patch onto the knee of a pair of jeans, and I don't care what it looks like, because we're not competing in a fashion show here. We just want it to be functional. So it's going to be ugly. It's going to be an ugly stitch, but it's going to work. That's all I care about. That is all I care. I might have the ugliest clothes around, but it's all going to work. You know what I'm saying? I don't care what it looks like. We just need it to function. Now, a similar philosophy applies to hand tools. So think about hand-powered tools, the kind of tools that the Amish use. So I've acquired hand drills, for example. No joke. If you need to drill a hole in a 4x4 piece of lumber because you're trying to build a barn or something, and you have no electricity, you have to return to Amish ways of doing it. So yeah, you have drill bits, and then you have hand drills. And it takes a lot of work to drill holes by hand, but it's very important to have the tool to be able to do it. And hand saws. So when I was growing up, my father taught me basic carpentry. It was hands-on here. Saw this 2x4 with this, you know, handsaw. And of course, as a kid, I was so amazed. Like, how can you saw that so fast with only, you know, 7 strokes and the 2x4 is cut? And as a kid, you know, you pick up a saw and you try to saw and it's like, it's not the same. It's going sideways and everything. But over time, right, you learn the skill. But many, not just Americans, but young people around the world today, they don't have the skill of how to saw with a handsaw. They don't know. I mean, they've never done it. No one taught them. So these are skills and these are tools to pick up. And handsaws can also be extremely valuable in this scenario. So it's worth getting a good handsaw or several of them. I own many different saws. I own like a Japanese style fine woodworking saw, for example. And then I own other handsaws and little smaller like keyhole saws and things like that, just because I'm building an off-grid system for how to repair and build furniture and work with wood and do very important things like that. Now, finally, I want to mention about cordage. And I've covered this a little bit before, but understand that there are very high-end types of cords. It's called the UHMWPE, ultra, I think it's ultra heavy molecular weight polyethylene. And these cords, or cordage, as it's called, it's available in many different diameters. I like to use millimeters for the diameters. It makes the most sense. You can get this kind of cordage in diameters like 0.8 millimeters or 1 millimeter or 2 or even 3 millimeters or even, you know, 1.5, things like that. This kind of cordage, in my opinion, is also worth, maybe worth its weight in gold. Who knows? Depends on how crazy things get. But when you need to tie things together or string things together or have a tie line for building a shelter or 1,000 other uses, you need cordage that is actually going to last, that it's weather resistant and it's wear resistant, like Kevlar thread or Kevlar cordage is known for being extremely abrasion resistant. But Kevlar cordage is not as strong in terms of the tensile strength compared to this stuff. What is that again? UHMWPE. And there's a brand name called Dyneema, D-Y-N-E-E-M-A. So that's what one manufacturer calls this, Dyneema. So this is the strongest stuff that exists, as far as I know, in terms of tensile strength. And personally, I think it's a great idea to stock up on different diameters of that cordage, because cordage is very, very difficult to make. And everything we're talking about here, whether it's nylon or the UHMWPE or Kevlar, these are all high-tech synthetic fibers. And the production of these fibers requires a complex society. And when we lose that complex society, these synthetic fibers will not be manufactured. I mean, think about that. A world without synthetic fibers? If the collapse goes far enough, that's exactly where we're going to end up. There will be no nylon, no Kevlar, maybe not even polyester. If things get really bad, you'll end up just going back to cotton and canvas and hemp clothing or whatever's made from natural fibers that's relatively easy to work with without having to have a giant chemical factory somewhere that produces the synthetic fibers. And by the way, all this belongs in the category of what I would call high-tech, high-resiliency. So synthetic fibers are very high-tech, but they also lend themselves to very high resiliency because it takes a lot of technology to manufacture them, but once they're made, they're not subject to EMP attacks. They don't have software. They don't operate in the cloud. They are physical objects or materials that exist that are, you know, bulletproof, in essence, against cyber warfare. And they don't need power. They don't have motors and so on. And yet, it took a tremendous amount of technology to create these things. Well, think about where all this is going in the world. And think about why stocking up on, you know, high-tech synthetic fibers might be a really smart preparedness strategy and perhaps even an investment strategy for items that could be bartered in the future.